All right, welcome to episode two, probably. This is our second week of reviewing our manuscripts, Hollywood Dreams and Ghost of Silver Creek, post-shitty first drafts. If anybody wants to read our shitty first drafts, just click on the SFD link under featured tags, and it'll take you to our original manuscripts. We did our first draft, our first whole entire completed first drafts, and now we're just going through that revision process, ironing out all the wrinkles, or at least most of the wrinkles. So, man, today, how you feeling, Steve?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. I got coffee today.
You got coffee today? Don't you drink coffee every day?
Well, I didn't have a coffee pot before, but now I have like a really cool old percolator that you plug into the wall.
And it makes great coffee. Now you get your own coffee. Is it like the old silver kind, like our grandparents had, and it kind of bubbles up in that little knob on the top of it?
Oh yeah. Well, it doesn't have the knob on the top. I wish it did, because it's kind of fun to watch. But yeah. But it does bubble up into like the cage where you put the coffee in and stuff. It makes a pretty good cup of coffee. And I'm going to need to refill here in a minute, but you know, hey.
All right. Well, it's a Sunday. It is a morning. We used to do this in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, I'm going to let you go first, which means you get to talk about me.
All right, cool. Then like revisions with, not Folgers in your cup.
You don't go for the Juan Valdez. Is that the guy?
Maybe. I think
Columbia,
so.
The Colombian coffee?
I think so. No, I think, the coffee I have right now is Hills Brothers. I think it's Columbia style coffee.
I don't remember which coffee company Juan Valdez was for, but I just admire the guy for riding that donkey through the cocaine cartel infested jungles of Colombia to bring us coffee.
Right. Well, our own CIA kind of helped with that, you know, cartel and infestation. So, you know, there's that.
Doesn't surprise me at all you went there.
Okay, here we go. Ghost of Silver Creek, revision number one. We are at, let's see, just going into section three on this draft. We start with, on the new material, we start with the Palomino and the woman charging out of the cornfield. And the men on horseback turning around, surprises all hell. I like the image with the opening sentence of the black circles of their mouths agape with awe and terror against their pale skin. It's like I read it several times going, is there any better way to word that? And I got nothing, because it when I first time I read it, I thought it felt clunky, but the more I read it, I was like, it serves its purpose.
I changed it. That might be why you liked it better.
I think so. I mean, I did like it better. There was something about it that still rubbed at me, but so I just left it alone, but I figured I'd at least give you a heads up what my initial thoughts were.
You had a few things in that paragraph, and so I just decided I was just gonna rewrite it now instead of going back later, which is why it's part of the red.
Yeah, I mean, I actually love a lot of the rewrites you did in this new material, and I guess we'll move on to
I also wanted to make like that last sentence. I usually don't talk this much, because I had her just kind of like running in shrieking, because I wanted to give that more ghost image than compared to my first draft.
For sure.
But I kind of wanted it to be an accent, so that's why I rewrote the part that she looked kind of like her reaching was kind of like desperate and pleading, because she just wanted some help. She didn't give a shit who was going to give it to her.
True, true. And I mean, when you're that desperate, you know, it kind of goes that way. One thing that I'm trying to think of the names of the Banshee's the only thing that comes to mind, especially with the Shriek of the Eternal Damned. The ghost figures in Witcher 3, like the corpse ghosts, ghosts in the dresses. Huh?
I haven't played that yet.
You haven't? What are we going to do with you?
I don't know. You want to take care of my kids?
No.
Well, it might be a while before I get to that game.
Well, I'll do it for money.
You're not getting any chicks for free.
Hey, that's fine. All righty. Let's see. Joshua Stone stood on a northern ridge above the town of Silvertip. Reins of his steam horse held loosely in metal fingers of his artificial arm. I like that you decided to keep Joshua in. I know we had talked about possibly that he might get the axe, but as of right now, I'm still glad to see him in. And I know we talked about more stuff than that, possibilities, stuff like that, but I won't go into all that. But Joshua on his horse on the ridge, kind of surveying the whole valley, if you will, definitely had a very Western film kind of feel to it. I don't know. I was thinking of like something like Pale Rider, but then I was like, but I haven't seen that movie in so long. I actually can't remember if there was a scene like that in it. So it's like, I don't know. Am I just thinking Pale Rider because it's a cool name?
Well, I'm glad I made you think about it.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm gonna have to rewatch it just for posterity. Let's see here. Was a gnomish. Made of an ally whose recipe was a gnomish mastersmith's secret. I'm liking how Chalk's individuality, his what makes him special, kind of gets hinted at right away. Had a minor edit on the bottom of that paragraph with just getting rid of some extraneous words was what I felt were extraneous. I liked the setting work with painting a picture of Silvertip. Let's see, a way station for the stage line and a dozen small ranches along Silver Creek. Those individual ranchers had long since sold out, and now Cranston Brody spread, stretched over the northern plains, and the mines dominated the canyon to the north. I like the addition of the mines. I'm wondering how they'll play into the story later on. So that's something that I'm going to, kind of be curious about. Let's see, I liked the addition of the backstory of Cranston Brody. I liked the detail of him being a Union man before the war and his interests before and after the war, and then him basically becoming a robber baron. And that also makes me question why and how the individual ranchers sold out to Cranston Brody. So that's good. Because it kind of makes him suspect, because you kind of get that feel of like he knows the plight of the working man, maybe, or the working class, if you will, but at the same time kind of has a robber baron thing going on. So I mean it makes him kind of a complex character, which is good, because his motivations are definitely going to be like, I'm thinking of like Tivia right now, and is that how you pronounce his name? Tivia, the dad from Fiddler on the Roof.
I've never seen that.
Where he's all like, you never seen? Oh, man. Yeah, anyway, he does this thing in the movie where he's all like, he's always like, well, on one hand, but on the other hand. So, I mean, it kind of has, Cranston kind of like feels like he has like a duality with his motivations.
I know maybe. Two words from one of the songs.
Yeah.
Sunrise, sunset.
I bet you, another one of the songs though, Matchmaker, Matchmaker, Make Me a Match.
maybe. Sounds a little familiar.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very pop culture-y at this point. You know, it has its ruminations in the ether. Let's see here. I noticed that, Cranston Brody with his full name, there's a lot of repetition with it. It's dude's name, so I mean it's...
In this particular paragraph, well, I call him Cranston Brody,
mm-hmm.
because I have a lot of Brodies.
Yes.
I used it a lot in this paragraph because I was afraid if I used a male pronoun, it might confuse him with Joshua.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering if you could like maybe like just do a Cranston every once in a while to kind of, just break up that repetition. But maybe the repetition's not a bad thing, because it's going to really kind of burn that name into people's heads,
I got like 50 characters. Maybe I should just use everybody's full name every time.
Hey, I mean, you could. I mean, you wouldn't be wrong. Where are we going next? Oh, and I like how it paints the influence that Cranston already has with political influence in Brewster County and the governor's office to shoo away all but the largest flies, which, yeah, totally makes sense. Because, I mean, there's always a bigger fly in the ointment somewhere. If the governor is like super corrupt, you know, he's going to be loyal to the highest bidder. And I'm sure Cranston's not quite the highest, but he's probably up there. Next page, page 10, Joshua contemplated this as his eyes scoured the valley under the light of Ina. I just made a suggestion to replace that with just a verb that does the heavy lifting, like surveyed or observed. That was just a couple that I picked out.
Scour is not a verb.
Well, it was just like his eyes, you know.
Yeah, those sound kind of passive.
It does. It does.
I wanted something like something that enhanced it, because he's not just looking. I mean, his eyes, they see everything.
Yeah,
he wants to scrutinize everything. Ooh, scrutinize.
Yes, and that's where I was kind of going with surveyed or observed, because surveying, you're kind of scrutinizing, you're evaluating, you're like that. But scoured, I mean, scoured works too. I mean, because if you're scouring for something, I mean, you're searching. So, I mean, yeah, it was just his eyes kind of had that passive voice feel for me. And, yeah, I just thought I'd highlight it and point it out, because, you know, we got to build each other up and break each other down, right?
Do you think eyes don't need to be there? Do you think if I just said Joshua contemplated this as he scoured the valley?
Scoured, or
if I just took out his eyes
scoured
as he surveyed.
I always kind of felt that scoured had more of a physical search element to it, but I could be wrong.
It just feels more intense to me because you're like putting your elbow into it, into that work.
Yeah.
And I was making this scrubbing motion that you can't see while I was saying that.
Hang on. I'm gonna have some keys sounding off here because I want to actually look up the definition for scoured.
Okay. Let's do that later. You know, you could just right-click on that, and it'll give you that choice.
I could.
Clean or brighten the surface of, rubbing it hard.
Remove by rubbing with an abrasive.
Subject to a thorough search in order to locate something.
Yeah, that's where we're at.
David scoured each newspaper for an article of the murder.
I think scour on its own.
I'm keeping that word now. The dictionary says it's good.
Right? Yeah. And that's the thing is it totally works. Just the his eyes thing felt passive.
It also suggests mine, drag, ransack, fine tooth comb.
Right. Fine tooth comb. Comb the desert.
I know. I was just thinking that was the image that was in my head when I read that.
Oh, yeah.
God, I don't know if that scene would fly today.
Oh, I know, right? Oh, dude. And you know what's funny is that I think that character later plays Tuvok in Voyager.
Oh, I have no idea. I didn't watch that.
That's okay.
I didn't watch anything you watched.
That's all right.
Apparently. I didn't like Voyager. It just like everybody was buddies too quick. It was disappointing to me.
No, yeah, I totally get that. Yeah.
So everybody, I was like, all right, it's been two episodes and you're all freaking buddies. This is dumb.
Yeah. Watch it again. It's like the buddy cop show of the Star Trek universe. Let's see here. Okay. Mines riddled the canyon walls like the pox. Nice. The fires of industry, metalsmiths, toolmakers, tanners, textile factories burned in the tiered buildings that grew in the valley among the mines like irregular-sized boxes tossed without care into a pile. I like how populated Silvertip feels now. It feels a lot more populated. It feels a lot more like moving out west, gold rush, kind of feel like the move out west to make your fortune kind of thing, with towns springing up everywhere. Robert Barron's coming out of the woodwork, people there to strip mine. Definitely adds to the separation of natural beauty to the corruption of it by progress. Inside the black maw of Upper Silver Strip, the drills and belts never stopped, and Silvertip sprawled out from the growling beast like a lolled tongue. I liked that image that kind of inspires. The lolled tongue, I think, is what did it for me. Because it almost feels like the land is dying. It's in a death rattle. And the tongue is just hanging out. Yeah. Has its own morbidity. See, by the time the creek spit out again on the far side of town, it was black with filth and barely visible even to Joshua's keen eyes. That was another thing. I liked the unnatural polluted stream of black. It's a good contrast between the natural beauty of the place and the corruption of it by progress. Yeah, it was a good contrast. And it shows kind of like what a virus mankind is on the natural world. let's see. Steam horse models ranged from basic skeletons, page 11, to near facsimile of the real thing. Chalk was a masterpiece of work. I liked the contrast between Chalk and the other steam horses while giving the description of Chalk and getting out like what makes him special. The gear work gave him a more fluid, natural motion, though most steam horses could obey basic commands and direction not normally associated with horsemanship. Chalk's sophisticated programming allowed him to operate independently. Now, the word programming, I had to think about that one. Because I know Chalk in the previous draft was like a golem of sorts,
So that's still in play, and this was something that I haven't really touched on in that first draft. Is he's just kind of sold that he's built and programmed to obey commands and stuff, but really the reason he's so smart is because he's actually the consciousness of another living being that's been trapped inside this machine.
Okay.
It's, a little corporate misdirection.
I like it.
Although it's not really a corporation, it's just one dude.
Right. Well, hey, according to the Supreme Court, one dude is a corporation. And a corporation is one dude. Oh, man.
I know how to pull all your strings.
You do.
I knew you'd love all this stuff. Steve's going to love this.
Just tell me, though, is Cranston Brody part of Citizens United?
I don't think so.
Okay.
United under his umbrella.
Okay. The Cranston United. Nice. All that remained was art from long gone empire and the modern attempts to fill a hole that had been left in the world of men. In reference to the elves having like left like a century several centuries before, where we're at now in this story. And I liked the sense of abandonment that the wording has and how technology and the need to grow empires kind of like is like filling that hole. It's like a toxicity that was, that is like seeping into that wound. I like the idea of that. A little further down. Well, Joshua said, if you don't have anything useful to add, we may well light on down. I want to say I've heard that expression before, but then I looked it up as like an expression or a colloquial, and I turned up nothing. So
yeah, interesting.
So yeah.
Yeah. Light out. Hey, we're going to light out.
Yeah. I've heard it used before and I couldn't find nothing. So I was like, well, just in case, I'm going to leave a suggestion there, but I don't think the suggestion really needs to stay. It was just one of those things where I was like, I'm unsure about this now.
Yeah, it's pretty common in Western novels.
All right, cool. Then, no worries then. Joshua was about to head down the path when a flash of light in the southern mountains caught his attention. It was beyond the canyon at a higher elevation than their current position. The flicker of a glow. He thought he could see the upper tips of lightning whirl like a tornado. I like that image. But they disappeared as quickly as they came. Then there was nothing. I like how this timeline is developing. and that Joshua is able to see this occurrence happen from a distance. Oh, where is that? It must be further down. Yeah. Anyway, I liked the image. I liked that he saw what was going down, but was like totally like, I have no clue what that was, and it was really weird.
Yeah, that's not just, I'm looking at your comment here. That's not Avis when she rides into Charles's place.
Oh.
That is when Avis, because in the first one, I had that timeline discrepancy.
Yes.
Where she goes early. She arrives at Charles' place early in the morning, but then Joshua is at Brody's place in the evening, and all the guys come in saying, oh my God, this thing just happened. So that is actually, it has to do with Avis. That is Avis's arrival. That is the teleportation of her arriving.
Okay. I thought it might have been when Avis went nuclear.
Yeah, I know. No. I think I need to change that flicker line a little bit because I don't really like it. But yeah, it's just kind of like this almost like whirl of flickering lightning happens off in the distance. And he was like, whoa, what the hell is that? And that's actually because this is the night. This is the nighttime.
Yeah.
This is like, 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Okay.
So that's when she arrives, and then she, sleeps most of the night in that meadow and then arrives in the morning. So the next scene after this scene that I'm writing is, we'll talk about that at the end.
All right. That's cool. Let's see here. So yeah, I think you could get rid of that flicker of a glow. Cause I think it's already covered with flash of light. And I think the lightning whirl like a tornado gives a really good mental image toward that as well. So yeah, I think you could probably axe that sentence if you wanted to. And then 35 miles from old Silvertip, basically, or at least.
Yeah, not quite that far because he's still some distance from Silvertip himself.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was wondering, like, is Chalk like just that good at like judging distances, or is there like some like inherent thing within him, like a technology that kind of like lets him go, oh yeah, that's like 35 miles. I was just curious.
Yeah, he's part machine. There is advanced machinery and stuff in him, and he's got like kind of enhanced vision and stuff or whatever. I even played with like maybe the whole time he could see that people were dark elves and he can see the moon and he just
stays quiet.
He just never considers the fact that nobody else can see it. And then Joshua says something to him, so I'm like, oh yeah, that moon thing. Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, what? You've known the whole time? He's like, yeah, I wondered why you're getting with her. I was like, you lost your mind.
It's the only thing I never could stomach about Santa Carla. All the damn vampires.
Yeah.
I actually kind of really like that idea.
So even if it's, I haven't committed to it, but I just thought it'd be funny. It's like, oh, I was wondering why you're sleeping with that dark elf.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I would not be opposed to you doing that.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's just a guess. I think anybody who's experienced in the outdoors could take a wild guess at how far something is. He does say approximately.
Yeah, and that works. That totally works. I was just curious. Didn't really feel there was anything wrong with it. I was just, let's see here. Down to section 4. I like where this is going when he gets in. Let's see, it was near midnight by the time they entered town from the north. They rode by the stables that were full of mules, oxen, and riding steers. I like the mention of the keeping coal and just, some, it wasn't uncommon to see steam horses stored there. I liked that. I thought the description of the town was also pretty good here, where it was like any mining town he'd been before, it bustled with activity. But unlike most, there seemed to be an orderliness to it. Sure, there was yelling and gambling and laughter coming out from lighted buildings. No one rode hell-raising through the streets. Women didn't stand on balconies and show their ankles. I was like, oh! Can't let those women be whoring about, exposing those ankles. Oh, man. Yeah. Just, it made me think of Jeff Bridges' character in RIPD.
I did see that.
When he's like, oh, look at those ankles. Yeah, it was. I liked that because yeah, it definitely does. It does some good heavy lifting with pre-suffragist movement and really how, you know, women were like totally oppressed. So yeah, I think it does a lot of good work there with just that.
It was okay to wear a corset that jacked up your boobs, but don't show those ankles.
I know, right? Yeah. We want all the cleavage, but none of those ankles. Oh, the cognitive dissonance. There was always somebody deep in a bottle ready to tilt the scales in favor of chaos. I like that. I like that sentiment. I definitely agree with it. Let's see here. All right. Down page 13. I just had a little few little minor edits. That was about it on that page. Nothing really worth going into. Let's see, page 14. At a large round table between the stage and bar sat a man about 60. I was wondering, is when it goes into the description of when he's hanging on the saloon doors and he's like surveying the feel of it. I mean, I got the idea there was tables and I got the idea that there was the bar and the kitchen, but I didn't really get an idea of like how populated this bar was. So I was just had a few questions like how many cowhands or hired guns are with him. Are there any of the coal miners at the saloon? I just made a note that the place felt a little empty for a Saturday night. And then I got into like more of a sociological context with some questions of like, are the coal miners even allowed in this saloon?
Of course you did.
Yeah, I did. Are they second class citizens in Silvertip? Is there a different bar they go to? Does Pit Grimfist still have a place of ill repute in Silvertip? You know, just, I have questions. And inquiring minds want to know. Let's see. Is that supposed to be a light dark suit?
It's light dark.
Okay.
I have two suits, dark and light dark.
Dark and light dark.
I don't know what it is.
I never go full light.
I only work in black and sometimes very dark gray.
Right. Unless you're paladin, then it's like, you know, it's either white suits and a white cowboy hat, or when you're ready to do business, you dress in all black. Okay, and then just another comment about Cranston Brody repetition. A little further down, Joshua noticed a young man next to Cranston Brody looking at him, which is Andy. I'm wondering, is Colt still a Brody? Is yeah, he there, or is he even still in existence?
He's not there.
He's not there. Okay.
All right. No, I just noticed a edit you skipped over.
What's that?
The dong was a melancholy affair.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the dong was a melancholy affair. Yeah. It was just a letter edit, so you know, it was, but yeah.
Oh, man, that's better than tree drunks.
I know, right? The dong was a melancholy affair, I have to say. Let's see. A little further down. 15. In fact, Joshua continued, I'd say she'd be quite disagreeable about the notion of you telling her she couldn't take a meal with me tomorrow, which is exactly my intention. I like that table over by the window. I liked this. I liked the exchange between Andy and Joshua. I don't really felt like it changed a whole lot, which is good. Yeah, I mean, the reason for the altercation is the same. From what I remember, the dialogue's the same, or at least really similar.
It's a little different. Like the last one, like in my first edit, I started writing the paragraph as Caroline was Cranston's like young girlfriend, and one of the guys was coming up because he was eyeballing her. And then by the end of the paragraph, I decided to make it his daughter. So I changed that so that it was obvious that was his daughter and this is Andy's sister. And
okay.
And,
yeah.
And then I added the part about asking her to a meal and point out which table he likes.
Right. I really liked that. I really liked that addition. It just really had that. Yeah. I'm going to dig this head a little further, you little creep. And then, Andy's, reply back, "You'll be damned first." Made me think of the old expression, "Damn your eyes." So yeah, I liked that. There was a line here on 16. "The entire bar became suddenly aware of the two men, and the silence felt all the heavier compared to the activity outside. Somewhere, someone sang Yonder Texas." And for further to kind of be like, you know, a heavier activity outside, it made me wonder if there was a rowdier second saloon in town.
Oh yeah, this isn't really a saloon. This is
like a hotel.
This is a hotel. This is a place where people go to eat dinner and enjoy a show. And
okay.
Stuff.
Okay. Cool.
That's why there's like, it's like, oh, there's women there and it might be a kid or two, but I didn't feel like going that deep into the details.
Oh no, that's all good. That's all good.
This is where respectable families come to eat.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. That comment made me feel like there was a saloon in town, or at least this wasn't the saloon, which yeah, was a hotel, slash kind of restaurant. So yeah. Okay. That works. Let's see here. Had a minor edit after that. It was just, you can see from there, Joshua glanced at the barkeep. The edit I made was just, His gray eyes like a steel wall, and the man stayed where he was. I don't know. It's not perfect, but I kind of felt that there was some rewording maybe in that sentence that could help tighten it up. Oh, and I saw the Cranston Brody snuck in. Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I'm listening.
All right.
Quietly judging you.
Okay, good. All right, a little further down, page 17.
I'm obeying that part of the workshop rules we hardly ever obey.
I know, but you know, when there's just two of us and we're doing basically doing a podcast,
yeah,
I think it's kind of more interesting to have us both, you know, having a little back and forth, which I think for the sake of what we're doing, it's an allowable offense.
Yeah, there just wasn't much there to comment on.
Yeah, okay, cool. Well, it didn't help we had audio issues earlier, so it was just, call me paranoid.
Well, if you count my kids screaming behind me, I guess that's an audio issue.
Right, well, there is that too.
I'm glad I got pushed to talk on.
Fair enough. I almost put on a push to talk because of my squeaky chair. Because I have a squeaky chair. Squeaky chair.
Oh, I know.
I need a new chair. But, you know, one of these days when I'm...
Maybe you should just do it like lounging in your bed.
Maybe.
Eating grapes from a silver platter.
Maybe. I could be like the hedonist bot from Futurama.
Yep.
But, and, you know, to possible subscribers out there for PNP, I need a new chair. Thank you. Unless you guys like to hear the squeak, then, you know, I can accommodate.
Can you squeak out the Imperial March?
I'm going to work on that. let's see here. All right.
You do it every time you read a part with Krantz and Brody.
that would be fun. I'm going to try that. I'm going to work on that. We'll see how it works out. Let's see here. Page 17, I really didn't have much to say. I did like the exchange between him and Cranston, though. And I did like the comment from Chalk that apology didn't sound genuine to me, Chalk noted. "Stay away from dark alleys or I'll have to break in a new person." yeah, I just like the sentiment that, you know, he'd have to break in a new person as opposed to, damn it, I got to break in a new horse kind of thing. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Page 18. I did like the Joshua nodded, swirled the bourbon in his glass and nodded. "That's fine, but I expect to keep my retainer if I'm not needed. I don't ride to the edge of civilization because I enjoy scorpions and snakes." Yeah. I like how he's just like flip with everybody. even his employer. He has no fucks to give. And then just my last note here. I'm really liking these rewrites. I didn't come upon anything that I felt were huge errors or egregious continuity errors, which was cool. It's good for, you know, being the first rewrite. I like how Silvertip and Brody have been fleshed out more. I found some minor edits and made some suggestions where I felt suggestions were needed. Is Andy going to be the impetuous cur instead of Colt now? I think we had talked about this. I liked the scene between Stone and Andy. Also, the thugs out at the Johnston place should be riding into Silvertip here in the near future. Or will Joshua's fate of being needed or not be decided the next morning? Kind of where I left. Yeah. Where I left at.
Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. So we are coming into the second parts of the revision for Hollywood Dreams. So we're on chapter 2 with a question mark.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to chapter this monstrosity out.
All right. I slammed the door of my rusted 32 Ford V8 to make sure it closes, and then walk to Lou's Tavern door. I think you just go 42, 32 Ford would be fine. I don't know if at this point we need the V8, but I think breakdown of this car at some point would be important, since this was what he used to, you know, this is the same vehicle he used to run the booze, right?
Yes. Which is really important that it's a V8 at that point.
Yeah.
Cause the other models were four bangers.
Yeah. So I would like more on the history of this vehicle at some point.
Okay.
Probably have some memories or something attached with it, you know, to break in his backstory. Who knows? Maybe even right there would be a good part. But I don't know. Something to think about. But if you're just if you're not going to go into right there, I don't think we need too many details about the car.
I don't know. Maybe at least give a little taste of something there.
Yeah.
I'll play with it and see how it, yeah. See how it plays.
Yeah. I think at this point, though, I would prefer, my next line is, the old brick building is still there despite all the nightclubs and restaurants that open and close all around it. So, yeah, I mean, you're opening up at Lou's, so I would just get more into Lou's. You definitely put more detail of Lou's throughout this whole section. But you kind of know me. I kind of like stuff all at once.
Bye. Fair enough.
Let's see. I noticed you got some customers in here. Who's chatting up people? Why he helps customers? I think that's a little better. Now it seems like his place actually has a reason to stay open. We talked before about how nobody else seems to be there but Tomb. I was wondering how he would stay in business if he's only got cheap stuff on the walls. It feels like it attracts a cheap crowd.
The good stuff doesn't necessarily mean not expensive stuff or, you know, whatnot.
Yeah. Oh, maybe use a different word than cheap then. Anyway, Lou's feels kind of classy to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't picture like the dregs of alcoholics being there. I consider it at least a middle class alcoholic hangout.
For sure.
Just a rewording suggestion at the bottom of page. What page are we on? Page 9. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, the construction hat. Man, I'm so looking out for all the colloquialisms now. Construction hat. The hard hat. Is that like the hide hat? The high hat? Or is that an actual construction hat?
I thought that was funny. But yeah, you're totally on. Yeah.
And if it is a hard hat, why is he wearing it inside the bar? That seemed a little weird.
Yeah, because, you know, it makes him feel safe, and safety has no quit time.
Okay. Danger never rests, neither will I.
Exactly.
All right. It seems a little weird to me, dude's wearing a hard hat in a bar, but whatever. I don't know. I wasn't alive in the 40s. I don't know what they did. God, I do want to see that saying now somewhere, though, hard hat. Let's see. You had Lou standing up from his toward the bottom. Just saw Citizen Kane last week. I do kind of like the movies thing, because he's got the movies on his mind since he's, you know, saw that pretty girl and they're wondering if maybe she was a you know, one of the many aspiring models, and they're going to hit up all the agents and stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't understand him, what the resting position was. I didn't understand what he was doing. Was he like leaning on the bar?
Yeah.
Leaning on the bar. Okay. Hmm. All right. Whatever. You can play with that or not play with it.
I'll make it more clear.
Page 11. Stay I just made a couple of edits. Just word edits. Nothing.
Okay.
Terribly interesting on my part there. They're having this conversation. Oh, they're having the conversation about Monty, where he's from, and she had the biggest. Oh yeah, they're talking about the lady from Oregon. So they're just they're talking about the lady from the crazy lady from Oregon they used to run hooch with, and then on page 12, by page 12, I didn't go back and highlight them, but there was a lot of bourbon sipping going on.
Oh, okay. I'll watch for that. Thanks.
And then this is the page, and they transition to the art dealer. So they don't still hang out with the art dealer?
I'm thinking he probably comes in from time to time.
Yeah.
But definitely like not like actively like friends or nothing.
Sure.
Because I kind of see like a lot of relationships getting severed when Prohibition goes away.
Yeah.
And people don't need to buy bootleg hooch anymore. Yeah,
they don't need to drink in basements anymore.
Yep. Yeah.
So at the bottom of that page, that's when Monty comes in and orders his bourbon with it. Bourbon's the same thing as whiskey, right? I feel like I've asked you that before.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's there's a little bit different difference in the distillation process, I believe. But yeah.
Tomb's feeling pretty good about his new partner in general and until he orders whiskey on the rocks. Just made a couple edits there. Page 13. Don't tell me how to run my bar, Elijah. Let's see. Man, I can't imagine even in the sandwich shop days him telling him how to run his bar. I like that Monty's asking about the gut rot room earlier. Or maybe this isn't new. Maybe I just don't remember. But it makes more sense with that later scene where he's actually looking for the room. Where's that room, Lou?
Right.
And then they're just talking about the photos. Oh, Monty's noticing the photos of some of the famous people that had come there. But I didn't really... page 13. 13 was pretty clean. Page 14, kind of a continuation of looking at a couple of the pictures. And then Tomb is talking about that just kind of the pictures just remind him of his wife and her wanting to be a star and hanging out with the Hollywood big timers. So then they start going through the books. Monty came in, he had some agent books. He called them mugshots. I don't think I think they're called headshots.
Headshots, yeah, but, you know, he's a cop.
It seemed, it confused me as the reader at first, because I was like, why is he looking for models in the mugshot book?
Fair enough.
Yeah, it fair does enough. Make sense. He doesn't give a crap what they're called. Anyway, I didn't make any edits on page 14 either.
Okay.
But I was slightly confused by the mugshot reference. Page 15, I grin and scratch my double chin. I didn't make too many edits on this page. Oh snap! So Monty's looking at all the models, and he just keeps on showing a bunch to Tomb. Hey, check this chick out, and finally he gets to Anna DeLuca, who is Tomb's daughter. That was pretty funny. That seemed a little glossed over, but it was like, that's my daughter. What? He looks at the picture to see if he can find some resemblance to us. So I thought that was funny. It was a nice addition.
Thanks.
I didn't make a ton of stuff like I did before, because so much has changed. Just kind of absorbing it and see how it's going to work with any of the newer stuff that you're adding.
Okay.
Because the more I see something, the more edits I make on them. I feel like this stuff's kind of fresh. I'm reading it for the first time here.
All right, cool.
So then Monty's all gung-ho. He must not have a family. he wants to go out and check out the clubs right now. It's nighttime, and Elijah wants to go see his daughter, who's like the only kind of decent thing in his life. So they have that conversation. Come on, Lou. Come on, Tune. Let's go out. And Flash is like, no, dude, I'm going to see my daughter, man. It's nighttime. Let's do it in the morning. I side with Elijah.
Right.
Unless you're on your way to arrest somebody right then. Let's do it in the morning. So then we switch to the Pacific dining car. So you're still going to dates? I don't know if these dates are really necessary.
I suppose they aren't. I don't know. It's just been something that I've stuck with, you know. I don't know. I could try it without the timestamps and locations.
It's not horrible that they're there. I'm just thinking there'd just be one less thing you'd have to keep track of, really.
True.
Not that you don't even know what the time lapse in this thing is, but as far as printing it and putting on display, it'd be one less thing to track of. So you've got Vivian is no longer alive. You've got Vivian dead from tuberculosis, which I think was a pretty bad way to die.
Yeah.
My question was, were they still together when that happened, or were they divorced? Were they on the outs?
I'm thinking they were still together when she dies. Okay. I figured since I was going to kill her off, I wanted her death to be painful for Tomb.
So what is... She was one of the points of contention between Tomb and Danny. So what's the points of contention now? You know, that and Anna kind of considering Danny as a second father. I mean, he is the godfather and was the sober one of the bunch.
Yes. I'm pretty much going with, like, the contention between Danny and Elijah over Vivian at this point is that they were both in love with her, and through her death and their each mourning her in their own way, they just kind of became estranged. Because like almost like their relationship was just a painful reminder at that point.
Yeah, but being estranged, I mean, right now, the way it's written now, the stuff that I've already read, they're kind of actively hostile to each other. That's a little different than being estranged.
Yeah.
Are you going to change that at all?
I'm trying to work that out with wanting to keep some of the...
What if... I'm just thinking of this because that scene with Monty trying to compare Anna's picture to a tomb?
Yes.
What if Anna was Danny's daughter? Bum,
bum, bum, bum. Oh, I see what you're saying.
I keep telling you to make this story simpler, and I just keep on throwing stuff at you that's more complicated.
I know, right? Right? I'm not opposed to that. I'm really not opposed to that. But it would kind of be interesting, you know, with Tomb, like, basically, like, knowing this, but, like, you know, to that point of, like, he loves her to the point where he doesn't care, but he's, like...
Maybe doesn't know.
Maybe he doesn't know.
Maybe looks like, I mean, you got a lot of things in here about how he looks like his mother or looks like her mother.
Right.
All right. So he's going to the dining car. He's pops some Altoids because he had a couple drinks and you capitalize that a lot.
Oh yeah. I don't know what was going through my head on that, but yeah.
I'm trying to highlight that. I didn't get them all. Oh, there's a couple more. All right. So he gets there. They're having a fairly nice conversation. She's riding him a little bit about his drinking because she can smell the Altoids, and that's kind of like a masking agent for steroids, I guess. Hey, it's there. Why is it there?
Right.
That's page 17. So other than highlighting some of the dads, I didn't really have anything to say about this scene.
Okay.
Order steak. She's a vegetarian. What's up with that scene where she's just ordering, he thinks he's ordering steak just because he likes steak?
Oh, like, you know, like she wants like, you know, I mean, not necessarily she's a vegetarian, but it's like, you know, filet mignon, man, that it was expensive anywhere you go. And she wants to make sure he's eating good because usually he drinks his dinner.
Oh, and she drops some, is this page or next page? Got some more capitalized ads. She just casually drops that she talked to Cesar Romero the other day.
Yeah, and that's kind of going on with, like, we had talked about, you had made a suggestion, and it was kind of like something that I had already written her in as, not going too much in depth with it, but kind of like intention of, like, having Anna kind of, like, being a talent scout for Danny while she's going to school. So she goes and meets with these people he wants to get for films if she's not, you know, if they're not both meeting them.
What's Cesar Romero? She don't need to scout that talent.
Right, but you still gotta entice them into wanting to do your movie. Yeah.
She's like a casting director?
Yeah. Yeah, for all intents and purposes, yeah, she'd be like casting director or assistant to the casting director, something like that.
Yeah, I don't think they came up with that term until like the 70s or 80s.
True.
I don't know that would be called now or then.
I'd probably just say casting agent for the film studio.
Yeah.
I'll look that up, though. I'll look that up just because I'm curious now, too.
Yeah, there's a documentary, I think I saw it on Netflix, about this woman who became like the first. They just go over all these movies that she was the person who cast the parts for. And a lot of them were, I mean, they're super famous movies. And a lot of them were like people, she couldn't believe that she had picked these people, but then they ended up being, you know, amazing for the roles. And then it talks about how, you know, she was trying to get more credit and stuff. And then finally they developed this thing called casting director.
Aye. Okay.
God, I can't remember her name. Yeah. I guess it's a poor example if I can't tell you where to find it or what her name was.
Oh, no worries. You know, honestly, I'm probably just going to nab some credits from films done in the late 30s, early 40s, and see how they attribute casting.
Oh yeah.
In the credits. And that would at least give me a starting place to kind of hunt that down, I think.
So that's page 18, where she mentions, you find out Danny is actually the godparent. You just had one part of that sentence was just on the wrong line, but you've already looked at that.
Oh, yeah.
And then a couple other minor edits, just for clarity. Page 19, Tomb is talking crap about Danny. Anna calls him out for being hypocritical since he was a dirty cop. I don't know if he's dirty anymore, but back then he was basically a dirty cop.
Yeah.
There was one thing. I didn't really mark it, but they were talking about worrying about getting caught, and I was just kind of like, well, he's a cop. He's probably got connections at the station. He's got famous people, probably politicians coming to his gin joint, and he's probably not going to get caught. That word going to be.
Right. True. There is that, but I mean, if you're crossing state lines, there's always, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess that's it. If he's in Oregon, that's a different issue. So page 20, just a couple minor edits, some more capitalized dads. She's asking him how, I said page 20, right? She's asking him how it's going with Monty. This is where she calls him out for drinking because he smells like Altoids. Page 20 says, yeah, okay, but I'm not sauce. I just had a couple. Let's skip to page 22 because I don't think I edited anything on page 21. It's just a couple paragraphs.
Okay.
Page 22, chapter 3, ? The dinner with Anna ended. I just put with hugs and kissed cheeks because it made the sentence shorter.
I like it. Yeah.
Let's see. And I kind of pictured her being Hollywood. Is she kissing him on the cheek or is she giving him Hollywood kisses on the cheek?
Right.
So he wasn't sauce then, but he's sauce now because he comes home at 1:30 from Ciro's. And I was a little unclear on whether, because he said Ciro's nightclub and a few drinks at Sardi's leaves me with no leads on the Jane Doe. I don't know if that was kind of a sarcastic joke that he wasn't investigating the Jane Doe. They just went out drinking, or was that him taking Monty's suggestion, going out and checking out the nightclubs? But, you know, hey, I'm at the nightclub looking for this girl. Why don't you give me a drink while you answer the questions?
Little column A, little column B.
So that was my only real question on that page.
Okay.
A couple other small edits, but, you know, just the scene, he gets home, he's got his cat that was a gift from his daughter, feeds the cat, hanging out in his room. Page 23, just one small edit so far. He's, I noticed you got rid of the green.
Yes.
Let's see. Doing some more drinking. We get a little bit more backstory. Cause he sees the pic of him and Vivian. And he's wondering like, hey, were those, he can't even remember if those were fake smiles or happy smiles. Plays little sax.
Yeah, I tried out your suggestion with having him playing an instrument, and I kind of have some ideas where I could, you know, have it go with at least, you know, things from the past.
Yeah. That'd be sax. Sax is a good instrument. It can be a little mournful. It can be a little jazzy.
Right. Yeah.
Display a bunch of different emotions through an instrument like that.
Indeed.
And I think that's it. Yeah. The next one. Yep. That's it.
All right. Cool. Question for you. You think I should get a police station scene in sooner, or do you think that that next morning would be a good place for the police station? Like have them show up at the police station, and then they end up going to the warehouse from the police station. I'll have to rework the warehouse scene a lot with some dialogue and stuff.
Yeah, I don't think you need to be at the police station before. You mean in any of the parts that we just read?
No, like yeah, I really wouldn't see the police station coming up. Yeah. In any of the previous parts, but do you think it would be good to get him to the police station before the warehouse?
Yes. I think this warehouse thing should be like
later?
A couple weeks later.
Okay.
Like significantly later. Not like months later, but
at least like maybe a week later or something.
I want to see some investigation into this girl's body before they pull down another case. And you can do that. This might be a good part. Hey, we're at the police station. Here's the evidence, blah, 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 blah. Maybe they can even talk to Abbott. I don't know how many briefings they give superiors back in the day, but you know, it's a murder. Maybe Abbott says, hey, what's with the girl? And one of the big issues I have with your first draft was they never tell the cops anything. And there doesn't seem, And I can see that happening later, but in the beginning, there just doesn't seem to be any reason.
For sure.
I think there should be a few chapters of investigating this woman. He can go talk to Richter. Hey, Richter, you recognize, I know if you can help me out with the case. So that would be a good spot to introduce him pretty early. He can go, talk to Danny. We can get Danny introduced. Hey, I'm looking for this girl. You know, we think maybe she's a singer or, she's got a pretty face in Hollywood. She's a singer. She's an actress. Maybe he doesn't even go talk to Danny. Maybe he just goes talk to other studios or something. I don't know. But I'd like to see a couple chapters of investigating this woman's death.
Yes.
And then go to the warehouse. And then that's where, we haven't gotten far on this girl. I've got this other case coming down. Oh, hey, look at this.
Yes. And that's one thing that I want to do during this police station scene is I want to have them get like a picture of the Jane Doe. Like even if it's just like a headshot of the corpse of like a picture to have to go, do you know this person? Instead of like, we're looking for a Jane Doe, but I don't have a picture of her. You know what I'm saying?
Well, when they just take a Polaroid of her?
They couldn't do a Polaroid, but yeah. I mean, basically just do like a headshot with a camera, at least make her look decent, make the corpse look decent, do a headshot so they can take it around and go, do you know this girl? Do you know this girl kind of thing? So that I feel is like another reason why Tomb is like, where's the fire with going and checking these clubs? Because, I mean, what are we going to do? Take him down to the morgue and have him take a look at her? I mean,
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's...
Yeah, I like that better.
Okay, cool.
All right.
And then just one last question. How do you feel the chaptering out is feeling with how I have this chaptered out right now?
Oh, I think it's fine so far.
Okay. All right, cool.
It seems normal. I have... I forgot to ask about mine. So on mine...
Yeah, go for it.
Part that I'm working on now is that scene with Joshua and the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Because that happens in, the morning. So I'm going to have that happening early in the morning, the next day, and then people are starting to wake up and filter in, and that's when the guys come back from the farm.
Oh, okay. Okay, so they come riding in the morning.
Yeah, I'm basically just... Because they came in because they have to come in the morning because the morning's when they got run off.
Yes, it was like, wee hours kind of, yeah.
And then after that scene, I'm switching back to Avis. And this is where, I got to make a decision for one of the big changes I was talking about. Do I make Pitt the farmer who's just trying to put that life behind him, that brawling, violent life behind him. And then, here comes this elf into his life. And, or do I continue just to make him the owner of Slim's and have him the way he was before?
Mm.
And then join up with her at the end. So if I kept him the farmer, he wouldn't have a kid or anything. He wouldn't have anything that really would attach him to leaving there to go on what he sees as his duty is to follow Avis on this quest. So the question is, just do I have him be the farmer, or do I have him be the whorehouse owner?
Ooh.
The farmer feels more natural to me and more tropic, I guess.
Yeah.
The farmer feels more traditional as the reluctant hero who gets involved with this. But the other way feels more unexpected and to me.
Okay.
You know what I mean? They're like, oh, hey, this guy is not what he appears to be. And now he's going to go off with her to do this thing. He kind of comes the unexpected hero of the story, I guess you could say.
Okay. Okay.
Although he's not the main person. And that just eliminates a bunch of characters, and I like them both. Like I said before, I like both those ideas, but I got to make that decision soon.
Ooh. So like if you go with, because as it is right now, you have Johnston and Elsa. Elsa's his daughter. Ava shows up. There's kind of that relationship that's made between her and Elsa, but also her and Johnston. We had talked about doing Pitt Grimfist as a farmer for.
Yeah, or trying to be a farmer.
Yeah, trying to be a farmer. Which, yeah, would kind of free up kind of the way the ending goes as you have it now. With Pitt just be able to like say, okay, fuck this shit. I'm out. I'm going with Avis. Whereas Johnston with the daughter kind of nails him down to where he's at.
But like Avis's relationship with the daughter, she learned a lot about the world through her.
Yes, and I liked that vehicle.
Because Pitt's developed, and you know, I got this background for him now.
I almost wonder if you could kind of do it both, like have your cake and eat it too. Like if you wanted to put Pitt in as, you know, kind of struggling farmer or, you know, trying to learn how to farm, you know, is maybe still have that Elsa character involved, but it's not his daughter. It's just like kind of like orphan that he doesn't have the heart to turn away. And when he goes, he leaves her the farm because she's old enough to work it. But
they're going to say you can whack her.
Or you could whack her, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Or that other family's got a bunch of kids. Maybe I could use them.
True, yeah. Yeah. You could. You really could. Especially if, like, the other kids come around the Pitt's farm, and they're like, you know, and, you know, they find them fascinating or whatever.
Yeah, well, they're going to have that meeting, too, because they all are banding together, so she's going to interact with them. She would interact with them the same way.
Yes, true, true. It would just be on, yeah, it would just kind of be on different terms. You know, I'd say if you wanted to run Pitt in that role of Johnston and axe Elsa, I say give it a go, man. Experiment with it. See how it develops. Because you can always go back. I kind of developed a liking for both characters. But I see where you're at, too, with wanting to simplify things and not make more work for yourself. And I totally get that because, you know, path of least resistance, I'm all about it. I think that's what those revisions are for, though, is experimenting. And if you wanted to experiment with it, you can always go back. If it does, you know, if it doesn't work, if it doesn't like fulfill like what you're seeing in your head or how you're envisioning it, if it doesn't.
I don't want to go back.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
That's why I'm kind of like agonizing over what to do, because I just don't want to go back into that and change everything again.
Yeah, because I get it. You want to move on to other things, and you want, you know, and that just ties you down longer to this piece.
Yeah, I don't want to be working on this for another year.
Yeah, I get it.
All right. Well, let's move on. Let's go to our writing prompt. Twice a month, we got a writing prompt, and we encourage people to drop a few paragraphs or a few lines or whatever they come up with it. And then, hey, if we see some that are interesting, we'll talk about them. And right now, the only ones we've got are for me and Steve. So, man, you guys yours up to read?
I do.
Tell us what the writing prompt is and hear what you got.
Oh, you want to do the written writing prompt first? Well, we had the photo prompt and we had the written prompt.
Oh, the photo prompt's not due yet.
Oh,
did you already do the photo prompt?
I already wrote my photo prompt, but that's okay. I don't need to do it now.
Yeah.
I'll just save it for later.
Photo prompt is like the last day of the month, and then we'll talk about that on the first podcast of the month.
Okay, cool. cool. That's doable.
Although I do need another. Is it my turn? Yeah, you picked the last photo, so it is my turn in a few days to put up another photo.
Yeah, and then I'll have the next writing prompt for you.
You should have it right now. You don't have it right now?
Oh, the new writing prompt?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't settled on one yet. Damn it, Janet.
I love you. That is a cold classic. Not tracers.
Oh, come on now. Trancers. Come on now. Jack Death was a fun character. All right. Here's my story for this prompt. It wasn't the first time I found myself tied to a chair in Vincent Sellers' basement. He hated it when I called him Vincent. My blue button-up shirt already had a little blood on the collar. And my black slacks were muddied and torn at the knees. The tears were not a fashion statement, and my palms still burned from the asphalt scrapes. What made me really sore is I definitely wasn't meeting Stacy at the club. It was possible I was going to visit an entirely different kind of party. Vincent's red knuckles struck me in the kisser again, and from a sweep of my tongue, I knew they were already fat, if not split. His brown aquanet armored hair was getting mussed up from his trying to motivate me. He had some of my blood on his yellow polo, though, so I guess we're even. I'm not going to ask you again, Benny. Who was the guy at the bar? Where's my fucking money? Bobby says. Bobby says, you know the scumbag, Vincent said, holding his fist to a bloody towel wrapped around a baggie of ice. What's the ice for, Vincent? I asked and licked my swollen lips. My eyes felt puffed up and tight, and my interrogator was definitely blurry. He told me it made hitting me hurt less at this point. I had to disagree. He hit me again. Why you gotta lie to me, Benny? He had the kind of grin that made a dental drill sound like the sweetest hymns, I said, expecting to get popped again. I could take it, soak it up. I just had to buy time or take one for the team, however it goes. He ordered two old fashions and drank one. Said the other was for his friend Al, who had a really short attention span. Bobby stepped closer and into the light of the single dangling bulb. His flash pink shirt and white suit jacket looked like it was from the Sears catalog Miami Vice starter kit. The tips of his slick back hair were frosted, and he chewed a toothpick like a poser. Let's just cut him and drop him at your uncle's scrapyard. I'm feeling pretty done snuffing him, Vincent said and held out his hand. Bobby pulled a blade from his jacket pocket and handed it to him. All right, Benny, you're going to give me something now, yeah? He said, and if it wasn't for the sheen on the blade, I would have only heard the click of the switchblade. I squirmed, turned my head, and spat some blood, mucus, and possibly even a tooth. The old phone on the wall rang three sets of three rings, and I wasn't the only one who knew it was for me. Okay, Vinny, listen. We shared a section of the bar top right next to the spot where the servers give their orders to the bartender. I paused and tongued the bloody gum of where a front incisor used to be. Though he was from Minneapolis, everyone at the bar called him Jamaica Joe. Fuck, Vincent said, closing the switchblade. Go drop Benny somewhere. We don't need that crazy fuck coming around here looking. That's it.
Okay. So the crazy fuck being Jamaica Joe?
Yeah.
I think you're supposed to start out with the line for the writing prompt.
I just threw it in somewhere.
Oh, man. Everything you write is gangsta.
Well, it was just like, I don't know. It was the Jamaica Joe thing, man. I was like, okay, that's totally a name for, like, a hitman.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's funny that you mentioned the spot where the waitresses pick up the drink, because mine also mentions that spot.
Oh, nice.
Wait, maybe I edited it out. Let me look real quick. Oh, no, I edited it out. I was going to add it later, but I didn't get to
it. Oh, no.
No. Yeah, but my guy also, when I was going to start talking about why he sits where he sits, it was at the spot where the waitresses pick up the drinks. Okay. So the writing prompt is, though he was from Minneapolis, everyone at the bar called him Jamaica Joe. So mine is, though he was from Minneapolis, everyone at the bar called him Jamaica Joe. Though he was a man of no visible Joe said he spent every winter in Spanish Town, the old colonial capital outside the port city of Kingston. It was true enough, from November to March, Joe ceased to be a nightly fixture at his spot at the bar, where he seemed to subsist only on complimentary peanuts and stouts. Whether he really went to Jamaica or not, No one knew. When someone would ask, Joe what he did in Spanish Town, he'd answer, "Oh, a little of this, some of that." As far as anyone knew, he did the exact same thing there as he did here. An impression of his butt cheeks imprinted into another stool down in the Caribbean, saving his place until winter. Yeah, that's all I got.
Nice.
As far as I got.
Hey, fair enough. Oh, and I got the writing prompt. I finally settled on one.
Yeah, like we were talking about, we got the monthly 200-story writing prompt. It's a picture. You write a 200-word story. It's just a practice in word choice, you know, trying to condense as much information you can in a short period of time. And me and Steve will read ones that we like. If we get enough subscribers, we'll, you know, start giving out rewards and stuff for choosing the one that we like. And then every 2 weeks we do a writing prompt and we will just, you know, submit stuff if you want to write something. And at the end of every one of our workshops, we'll just talk about it like we did now. Talk about a couple. Hopefully a couple that aren't ours.
Right. I hope so.
So what you got?
Okay. This is a dialogue prompt. And I would say for this one, just try to fit this in the story somewhere. I don't necessarily think you have to start with it, but if you want to, you can. And here's the prompt. Instant messaging would have ruined Donkey Kong. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. That's funny. All right. So go put that in the group. How did I label that? Oh, I'm not even looking at the group. I'm looking at the page.
Here, would you like me just to send it to you? And
no, I just write it in the group. And you actually have to be a patron to do that. So go to our Patreon site to look up the benefits and see if you're interested in following along with us. If you are, we're happy to have you sign up. And if you think we suck, then just unsign up. Most of that or portion of it's going to go to art and our work and benefits for our patrons at patreon.com. So just go to patreon.com, search Pacific Novel Project, or you can just do a slash Pacific Novel Project and it'll show right up. Anything that you want to add, Steve?
No, I think I'm good, man. I think we had a pretty good podcast this go around. I'm feeling pretty good about it. And I just hope we get some people that want to hang out with us, talk with us, listen, interact on our Facebook page, and we hope to hear from you soon.
All right. And until next time, see you guys later.
Adios.